And David said, "Whoever smiteth the Jebusites first shall be chief and captain." So Joab, the son of Tzruiah, went first up and was chief. So we are told, Joab, who became David's general, apparently earned the position through heroics in the conquest of Jerusalem. Could the heroic action have been the climbing of this terrifyingly tall vertical shaft? Welcome to Jerusalem 365, Episode 7, David's Water Source and Ours. I'm Mayor Soloveitchik. Herschel Shanks, longtime editor of the Biblical Archaeological Review, described in a 1999 article his climbing the long vertical ascent underneath ancient Jerusalem, known as Warren's Shaft. Quote, "Dangling on a rope ladder in a subterranean shaft 30 feet below the city of David, the oldest part of Jerusalem, and 45 feet above the bottom of the shaft, I wondered whether I was being foolhardy. At 69, should I really be trying to reenact the hypothesized entry into Jerusalem of Joab, King David's general, that enabled the Israelites to capture the city?" End quote. Shanks adds that he had first experienced the shaft in the 1970s, and then, too, his thoughts had been on the Bible. Quote, "I recall peering into the gloom and wondering, could Joab have climbed up there? The sides of the shaft were by no means smooth, so he might possibly have found a foothold. My friend Mohammed, the Arab antiquities dealer south of the Gihon Spring, told me that he had climbed it when he was a boy." End quote. Could a boy do this climb? Could anyone, without modern equipment? More importantly, could Joab, the general of King David, have done it? And could this tunnel, discovered by the remarkable Charles Warren 150 years ago, show us the means through which King David conquered the unconquerable city? As we have seen, throughout the period of the Judges, Israel is fragmented and Jerusalem remains unconquered, still held by the Jebusites. Throughout this time, the people worship at a central location, the tabernacle at Shiloh. Then, as described in the beginning of the book of Samuel, Shiloh is destroyed by the Philistines and the Ark of the Covenant lacks a fixed home for the first time in hundreds of years. Samuel the prophet succeeds in uniting the people, and as the prophet ages, Israel demands a king, and Saul of the tribe of Benjamin is selected. Saul lacks the necessary virtues to lead Israel. And when facing the gargantuan Goliath, a young shepherd boy named David emerges as savior of the people. Saul, told by Samuel that he would be replaced, seeks to have David killed. But David survives thanks to the help of Saul's son Jonathan. With Saul's death, his family fights David's forces. And with David's victory, the king seeks, as we have discussed, to unify Israel by moving his capital to a site that will join the territory of the tribe of Benjamin with his own tribe of Judah. A city, in other words, that will forever remember both the sacrifice of the original Judah for his brother Benjamin, as well as the sacrifice that Jonathan of the tribe of Benjamin made for David of the tribe of Judah. That city, bordering on both Benjamin and Judah, is Jerusalem. Thus we are told in 2 Samuel chapter 5, verse 6, "And the king and his men went to Jerusalem unto the Jebusites, the inhabitants of the land, who spoke unto David, saying, Unless thou take away the blind and the lame, thou shalt not come in here," thinking David cannot come in here. In order to understand this seemingly strange verse, we must remind ourselves that Jerusalem had been seen as unconquerable. Surrounded by valleys on three sides, it was essentially a fortress city. Thus, perhaps in order to emphasize the city's purported invulnerability, the Jebusites seem to have placed blind and lame soldiers at the top of the city walls. How then does David take Jerusalem? Here scripture is succinct and mysterious. Verse 7. "Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, what is called now the city of David. And David said on that day, Whosoever getteth up to the Tzinor and smiteth the Jebusites, and the lame and the blind that are enemies of David's soul, he shall be chief and captain." Apparently, something called the Tzinor was the key to conquering the city. But what is the Tzinor? Today, the word in Hebrew means pipe, and in attempting to interpret the verse, we must again turn to Jerusalem's geography. One of the strengths of Jerusalem's location was its proximity to a renewable water source in the desert, the Gihon Spring, east of the city. In times of peace, the Jebusites of Jerusalem could have easily strolled out the eastern city gate to procure this life-giving water. But what of times of war? What would the Jebusites have done in a time of siege? In answering this question, we turn to the remarkable man for which our archaeological site under discussion is named. Captain Charles Warren journeyed to the Holy Land in 1867 as part of the British Palestine Exploration Fund, exploring a different tunnel that was linked to King Hezekiah, which diverted the original water of the Gihon. Warren suddenly discovered a steep vertical shaft extending upwards. Warren amazingly described how he, along with his aide, Sergeant Bertels, created several scaffolding stories, allowing them to climb the tunnel in the dark. Here is what Warren wrote. Quote, "By jamming the boards against the sides of the shaft, we succeeded in getting up 20 feet. When we commenced the first landing, cutting a check in the rock for the frames to rest on and made a good firm job of it. Then, with four uprights resting on this, we commenced a second landing. On lighting a piece of magnesium wire at this point, we could see 20 feet above us a piece of loose masonry impending directly over our heads. And as several loose pieces had been found at the bottom, it occurred to both of us that our position was critical. Without speaking of it, we eyed each other ominously and wished we were a little higher up. The second landing found us 27 feet above the bottom of the shaft. The formation of the third was very difficult, and on getting nearly to the loose piece of masonry, we found it more dangerously placed than we had imagined. So we arranged that the third landing should be a few inches under this loose mass, so as to break its fall and give us a chance. This third landing was 38 feet above the bottom of the shaft. We floored it with triple boards. It was ticklish work, as an incautious blow would have detached the mass, and I doubt if our work would have stood the strain." End quote. Ladies and gentlemen, we must imagine Warren with poor Sergeant Bertels behind him, creating their own scaffolding as they went, utilizing magnesium to light their way, with the possibility of plummeting at any moment. Upon climbing the shaft, Warren came upon a landing and then found a horizontal tunnel underground leading westward into the original Jebusite city. Thus, a possibility presented itself. This could have been how the Jebusites in Jerusalem would have procured water for themselves in times of siege. They would have walked underground from the city westward toward this vertical shaft, lowered down a bucket, and drawn up water for the city. Warren's discovery led archaeologists to suggest that it was this shaft that David's forces could have used to enter the city. This could be the meaning of the account of Jerusalem's conquest as described in 1 Chronicles 11, verse 5. "And the inhabitants of Jebus said to David, Thou shalt not come herein. Nevertheless, David took the fortress of Zion, which is the city of David. And David said, Whoever smiteth the Jebusites first shall be chief and captain. So Joab, the son of Tzruiah, went first up and was chief." So we are told, Joab, who became David's general, apparently earned the position through heroics in the conquest of Jerusalem. Could the heroic action have been the climbing of this terrifyingly tall vertical shaft? Aaron Horovitz, in his excellent City of David book, to which I'm indebted, conjures the moment for us. Quote, "We can imagine him scaling the shaft, perhaps in a pre-dawn incursion, and with a silent flash of his sword, silencing the sleepy guards positioned at the entrance." End quote. Horovitz adds that Joab would then have entered the city through the horizontal tunnel and would have opened one of the regular water gates, allowing the forces of David to enter. But could Joab have climbed this shaft? After all, unlike Warren, he was acting with stealth and would not have been able to construct platforms during the ascent, and he certainly would not have lit magnesium wire to guide his way. The archaeologist Yigal Shilo tells us that in 1978, he too tried to climb it and was not successful until inspiration struck. He tells us, quote, "One pleasant wintry day, long after the 1978 season had ended, I took a Sabbath stroll south of the city in an area where precipitous, rocky pillars rise above the valley. Here I came upon the solution to our problem. Alpine mountaineers were training on the steep rock faces." End quote. Shilo asked these men, mountaineers ascending the rocks of Jerusalem, to help him climb the shaft, and they agreed. But he adds, quote, "Here too we were surprised, for the climb up the shaft obviously demanded special abilities which we hadn't realized were needed. From among the entire team of archaeologists, only two reached the top of the dark shaft, even with the help of the rope." End quote. The difficulty of this climb was one of the reasons that Shilo ultimately decided that Warren's shaft could not have been the means through which Joab helped conquer the city. He was joined in his skepticism by other archaeologists, including Ronnie Reich and Eli Shukron. Herschel Shanks, in his own article describing the climb, add several reasons why some archaeologists deny that the shaft could have been utilized as Joab's source of entry. He points out that there are no marks left from ropes that would have been used against the rocks for centuries to draw water, And moreover, Shanks adds, quote, there was a water line on the walls of the cave, only a foot above the cave floor, end quote. This, Shanks argues, is insufficient for drawing water. But as Aaron Horvitz tells us, other archaeologists disagree. They note that Warren himself records finding in his time an iron ring that was clearly used for a rope, which is why there would not have been marks left by the rope on the rocks. Moreover, archaeologists suggest, a damming process might have helped raise the water when needed. And I would add, in perhaps an unscientific reflection, that having seen the remarkable and terrifying documentary titled Free Solo about the rock climber Alex Honnold ascending El Capo without a rope, that I would not deny the possibility of anything being achieved by gifted individuals in this area. And as we will see, the strong will of Yoav, for better or for worse, would drive David's general to achieve extraordinary things. We cannot know for sure whether Warren's shaft was the means by which Yoav entered Jerusalem, but it seems clear that a water source did play a role in the conquest. The scholar Terence Clavin has pointed out that the word Tzinor only appears in one other source in the Bible, Psalm 42, which speaks of God, metaphorically, as a source of living waters. Kayal tarog alafike mayim, kei nafshi tarog elecha Elokim. As a deer thirsts for brooks of water, so does my soul thirst for thee, O Lord. And the source adds, my God, my soul is cast down within me. Therefore will I remember thee from the land of Jordan, and of the Hermon, and of the hill Mitzar. Deep calleth unto deep at the noise of thy water spouts. All thy waves and thy billows are gone over me. At the noise of thy water spouts, this in Hebrew is Tzinorecha. This clearly indicates that Tzinor refers to some sort of water source, and that therefore, in describing a Tzinor, the Bible is telling us that a source of water was key to David's conquest of Jerusalem. Terence Clavin's point is, I think, excellent. And I would add that the link between these two verses, the only two usages of Tzinor in the Bible, the thirsting for God and Yoav's ascent up to the Tzinor, provide us with a meaningful metaphor. The ascent to the water source embodies for the Psalms nothing less than the ascent of the soul to God, the longing of the soul for God, and therefore, we might say, the Jewish longing for Jerusalem. We can therefore suggest that if Yoav in the Tzinor ascended against the forces of gravity, then that is akin to the Jewish relationship with Jerusalem, a people struggling against all the historical forces seeking to drag it down, but always, always making the improbable climb of the ages, always, always keeping Jerusalem in Jewish sights. We will speak more of Charles Warren when we reach the 19th century in the story of Jerusalem. But we close today by noting his love for the Hebrew Bible and for the Jewish people, all of which motivated his dangerous climb under Jerusalem. Aaron Horovitz tells us that to a fellow soldier, Warren once wrote that a trip to the land of Israel will convince you of the historic precision of the Bible, and that Warren wrote to his grandson the following remarkable reflection, regretting that Christians, in his view, had lost interest in the traditions and observances of the Jewish people. Quote, what I can tell you is that we Christians can learn a great deal from the spiritual life of the Jews. That way of life was facilely abandoned when Christianity was founded and is worthy of greater attention than we give it. I am convinced that it is due to the unique lifestyle maintained by the Jews until this day that they are the most talented and healthy of nations. The Jews' spiritual lives provide us, the Christians, with an enlightening example. End quote. So Warren wrote. We, in turn, should be inspired by Warren's quest and follow his example in seeking to understand Jerusalem of yore, utilizing archaeology and the precision of the Bible to uncover its treasures and to understand the spiritual life of its Jews. And as we do, we will continue to further uncover the relationship of our people with David's city and why the longing for it has never departed from our souls. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, signing off.